So, as we tie into the parsha, this week's Kabbalah Satorah, and I always found it interesting that the introduction to Kabbalah Satorah is Vayishma Yisro, this entire story of Yisro entering into the covenant, of coming into the Jews and coming into Moshe Rabbeinu and finding his son-in-law Moshe Rabbeinu, etc. So, I always found it interesting, like, you know, you want to talk about the introduction to Kabbalah Satorah. I don't know what I would have written, but I don't know if I would have specifically chosen this concept of Yisro coming, Vayishma Yisro, Ma Shama, Shamu Ba. I mean, and also, as not everybody holds chronologically, this is exactly where it belongs. Efshar, it could be that this is not the place where chronologically it actually happened, but it happened after Har Sinai. And yet, the Torah felt that this was important, for some reason or another, to place it right before Har Sinai. Right before Maimon Har Sinai, probably the greatest moment in Klal Yisrael's history. So it really begs the question as to what is this story of Yisro coming prior to Maimon Har Sinai? And I'd like to, I've never seen this inside, but based on something that Rabbi Simon says in next week's Parsha, something I initially heard from Rabbi Kamenetsky at a Rosh Hashanah Drasha many, many years ago, and then I saw it subsequently in the Imrei Baruch on Parshas Mishpatim, I think it helped us answer this particular question. The first thing is we have to say is Vayishma Yisro, this idea of Shmiya. What is this idea of Shmiya? Ma Shama Shama Uba. What's so critical about it? So there's a world famous question. It's a question that many, many children ask, that is found in all kinds of different Sfarim. And I'm going to share with you an answer from Matzis Yahu Solomon. It's well known that there's something called the Ben Sora Mora. Lohaya v'lo nivra, it never really happened, the Ben Sora Mora, the wayward son, the rebellious son. And we don't kill him necessarily for something that he did. He's not the greatest guy. He sits and eats, drinks, and all day and is merry, and he steals and this and that. But he's not worthy of the death penalty as of yet. And yet, the Torah says we kill him, and the Gemara tells us why is that, and that's because Nidon al Shem Sofo. We kill him because of eventually what's going to happen. He's going down a wayward path of destruction, and therefore we take him out now prior to him doing anything wrong. That's the Ben Soromar. On the flip side, we have another concept of Yishmael. Yishmael is sent out by Avram Avinu, or really by Sarah, which we're going to get to at the end. Sarah says to Avram, this guy can't be here. Yishmael is a bad influence on Yitzchak. We got to get rid of him. And you know, everybody's worried about what class their boy is going to be in yeshiva. So could you imagine if your brother, your half-brother, is this Oisvarf Yishmael? So that's not the class. So you have two choices. You can either take your kid out of the class or tell the principal to get rid of that kid from your class. So they go to Avram Avinu. Avram, take him out. And Yishmael is thrown out. While he's there, he's about to die, and the Malachim are suggesting that he dies. But then HaKadosh Baruch Hu answers, no, Asher Hu Sham. We only judge them in the here and now. We don't look into the future. So it seems like there's an inherent contradiction. On the one hand, with Yishmael, we're not looking at him in the future, as opposed to the Ben Soramara, where we are looking into the future. So how does one reconcile those two? Rabbi Kamenetsky asked this question in the context of Tzkiyas Shofar. Okay. So Rav Matzisyahu Solomon gives a very, very beautiful answer. I think it's critical in something I speak about all the time. And that is, there's a fundamental difference between the Ben Sora Mora and Yishmael. What do we know about the Ben Sora Mora? We know very little about him. But what does it say? We know he's Einenu Shomea Bekolech. He is not somebody who's willing to listen to anybody's voice. He is somebody who is Einenu Shomea Bekolech. You could talk to him until you're blue in the face. You have people who are not willing to accept any influence whatsoever from the outside world. They're here, you're talking to them, but they're not listening. You know, there's an old expression when you're a parent, you tell your kid, you're hearing what I'm saying, but you're not listening to what I have to say. So you have the Ben Sora Amora, and he's already shown himself to be somebody who won't listen. And if he's not going to listen, therefore he's not able to accept any influence. And therefore we can look into the future, and we know exactly what his path is going to be. And therefore, before he gets to that point of destruction, we actually end his life, so to speak. That's the Ben Sora Amora. On the other hand, we have a Yishmael. What's the name of Yishmael? It's critical. It comes from the word Shomea. It comes from the word to listen. To listen. To listen doesn't just mean to hear what somebody says. To listen means you're willing to accept influence from somebody else. And when you're willing to accept influence from somebody else, the possibilities of the future are infinite, because who knows where you're going to wind up. It doesn't mean you're going to go in path A, after you're going to go in path B. This is who Yishmael is. So that's the difference between the two. So now let's go back to our story. We have Kabbalah Satorah coming up. That's one of the big highlights of this week's parsha. But before that story, there's something that the Kadosh Baruch Hu is showing to us. Vayishma Yisro. That's Aleph. And Yisro heard. What was the godless of Yisro? People don't understand who Yisro is. Could you imagine? I mean, we have people like this today. You know, you have Asher Wade. You have, I don't know if you're familiar with who Asher Wade is, but Google him. He was a priest, and then he came over. And yet people are really, really willing. Yisro looked at every religion. Yisro was somebody who was a true searcher, but he was somebody who was truly willing to listen. And what does Rashi highlight? Ma shama Yisro uba. What did Yisro hear and come? Meaning, he didn't just hear it. He allowed that which he heard to have an influence on him, which motivated and moved him to go on to do something else. That's the greatness of Yisro. It wasn't just, how many times have we heard something and you just turn the page? Oh, that's a nice idea. Okay, Victor. And you don't think about it again. Yisro was somebody who allowed and enabled this to affect him in a real way, and therefore changed the entire way he was willing to lead his life and move in a separate direction. This is critical for understanding of what acceptance of Torah is going to be. But more subtly is, as the story happens, you have to put yourself not just in Yisro's shoes, but put yourself in Moshe Rabbeinu's shoes. Everybody at this table could understand it. But Moshe Rabbeinu was a pretty good leader. He was working day and night. He felt he was doing a good job. He was the ultimate judge and jury of all the cases. And nobody's complaining. And everybody's giving him high praises as a leader. And what happens next? His father-in-law shows up on the scene. Right? And his father-in-law starts dishing out advice. You know, Moshe, maybe if you try something different, things would come out a little better. You know, I got this whole idea for judges and this judicial system, and we'll have a lot of judges doing this, and we'll have some judges, the judges on the mud, and you'll be like the Supreme Court in the end. So now, you're Moshe Rabbeinu. The easiest thing to do is blow him off, because nobody cares. He's a father-in-law, he's the rookie, you know, and you're the guy who's in charge. But yet, Moshe was able to listen to Yisro and allow him to effectuate the way he was as a leader. He was willing to accept influence from somebody outside of himself. He had the power of Shmia, the unique power of Shmia, where he wasn't just focused on what I have to do, but as a leader, he was very much focused on what other people were willing to do. And this is the greatest lesson we could have prior to Kabbalah Satorah. Sorry, I forgot to say it. Rav Schwab echoes this opinion. Rav Schwab, on the pasuk Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, Rav Schwab says something similar. It's a beautiful Rav Schwab. And every time you see the word Shomea in the Torah, you have to understand, it's not just saying he heard, it's that it effectuated him, it moved him, it affected him. It made the person then, you know, do something about it. So, in order to understand what Shema Yisrael is, we say, Avinu Avrachaman, the same believeinu, lahavin, lahaskel, lishmoa, lilmod ulamed. We say this tefillah each and every day. So what's Shmiya doing here? Lahavin, lahaskel, lishmoa. Obviously, you understood, you gave it seichel. It's the hard word, hard to give, you know, you gave it a brain. You gave it a hard word to translate, seichel. Lishmoa, you heard, lilmod, learned, v'lelamed, and you taught. What's Shmiya doing here? Why is it that that's, you know, prior to, you know, right after Havin Haskel, you first you have to hear and then you have to understand. What is it? You understand and then you heard. So he says, based on the pasuk of the following, it says, "Vayehi b'shachin Yisrael be'eretz ahu vayelech Reuven vayishkav v'zbila pilekesh aviv vayishma Yisrael." Yaakov, after Reuven did the terrible thing with Bila, whatever he did, vayishma Yisrael. Yaakov heard. What does it mean, Shishama? What does it mean? It means that it made a deep impression upon him. He never forgot it. And it's something that he unleashed at Reuven on his deathbed, where once again he poured out to him, "This is what you did to you, to the tent of my, when I was with at that time." And it made a tremendous impression. That's what it says. V'sein b'libeinu l'shmoa. It should be rooted, meaning that it should be that when you have, Yisrael Schwab says, beautiful, that the Divrei Torah should be entrenched into my heart, that it should never be wiped out. Shema Yisrael, once again, is something that we're asking for, a what's called a Shmiya Kavua, a permanent Shmiya that it moves you. And every time you see the word Shmiya, and of course, where's the classic Shema, which we're, it's not in this week's Parsha, underrated, it's in next week's Parsha, that of Naaseh V'Nishma. It should be Nishma V'Naaseh. Everybody asks this question. First you heard and then you did. The Teretz isn't just a Naaseh V'Nishma. It made an impression upon me. It changed me. I heard it and it made an impression on me. It became fixed to me. This is the quality that the Torah is trying to articulate is necessary for us to accept the Torah. In Shalom Bayis, this could be one of the greatest qualities one has. The Gemara says in a number of places, what happens if you're tall and your wife is short? What's the expression the Gemara gives? The Gemara says, Lost, you should know this one, right? Your wife's not short. But what is it? It's gachin. You bend down, velochish. You have to bend down and listen. You have to be a listener. You have to sit and try your best, not just to hear what the person's saying, but as I said before, you have to allow the other person and accept their influence upon you. This is true in your marriage, in your shalom bayis, and this is true with your children. And let me explain each one. John Gottman. We spoke about him in the past. I'm a big Gottman chassid. I called Mr. Mark this morning. I said, I got this thing about Shmiya, power of Shmiya. I think it's huge. I Googled it last night. If you Google the following phrase, the acceptance of influence, you know, marriage, about 42 people have written Gottman stuff about this. Where he talks about how to be a good listener. The first thing in listening is the following. Too often I see it that people are talking and they're doing something else, right, when the other person's talking. There's something about being an attentive listener. It's not just, again, it's not just, you know, that you happen to hear the words the person's saying. The words have to matter to you. By Yishma Yisra, you have to be willing to accept the influence. If you're doing something else, you're not willing to accept the influence. I mean, you're willing to accept that you're listening to the person, but you're doing something else. A conversation shouldn't be had in which you're just rooting for the conversation to come to a thrilling conclusion, which very often people do, because especially men, I think they say that statistic is shown in marriage, 80% of the time a difficult conversation is brought up by a woman. Because men would prefer to go into their cave and women would prefer to talk about it. That's just the way it comes out. But men, in terms of, you know, once the conversation begins, the challenge is to try to accept the influence and try to be engaged in the conversation. Not just being somebody who's sitting there waiting to end the conversation. You have to always, you know, Gottman gives four tips. You know, don't give your opinion interpretations, but merely, you know, everyone's like, oh, what you're saying, you know.
You're
medayikul. That's how guys do very often. Well, I think that the reason why this is happening, we like to give our insights into it. That's not what we do. What you could do is you could ask for examples. Wait, I don't understand. Why is this the reason why? Ask for examples. And the fourth thing he says is that you have to try your best to edit out all of your responses. You know, it's got to be something that's good. But what's important, and this is something, we had a couple here last week, a couple weeks ago, and they said, and the woman had passed away, and they said what they remembered most about their mother, about their wife, was that she was always saying that the most important thing one could do was validate the other person's feelings. Validate, validate, validate. And the guy was saying, I was so sick of that word already, you know, I was done. But the truth is, in every relationship, if you value your partner and you're willing to accept their influence, you have to be willing to validate that other person. And this all comes, it all starts from the ability that you're sitting and you're listening and you're willing to accept what they have to say. And the only way that is with the true power of Shmiya. With the true power of Shmiya, you have to take responsibility. That's for yourself, for your feelings, and don't blame anybody about what's going on. I got to tell you, this is also true when it comes to raising children. You see, as a parent, very often we know better than our kids. And I'm not saying we don't, and I, you know, maybe that varies. But as a kid, you have to remember, right? I wasn't a kid so long ago. I also knew better than my parents. So I'm in an ironic and, you know, unusual spot. When as a kid, I knew more than my parents. As a parent, I knew more than my kids. You know, but maybe I'm the exception. But the truth, right? But the truth is that the kids think they know more than the parents, and the parents think they know more than the kids. But a lot of it comes from the very initial starting point of any conversation you have with a child. No matter how old the child is. I read something fascinating today. What's our first reaction to do when our kids start to complain or nag or cry about something, at least when they're young? My gut reaction is always, to do something that will distract them from their emotions. I'll tickle them. My gut reaction, right? Because I just don't want to deal with complaint. I can't stand when kids are fetching. That's our net. So what do? I giggle, you know, I look over there, you know. You know, what's the oldest trick in the book? Hey, look over there, right? That's the Geico commercial. But, you know, you take, and you start talking about something else. But what I'm doing when I do that is I'm basically not validating their feelings. They could be 2 years old, 3 years old, 6. It doesn't matter how old they are. But I'm not validating. I'm not listening to them. So what I'm doing is I'm distracting. I've taken away my koach of shmir, and I'm kind of not valuing their doing. And later on, they're not going to know how to deal with their emotions. A healthy parent, somebody not like myself, when every kid cries, again, I got to be honest, you know, listen, I have other strengths. In this particular, fetching is something I'm not good at, is you deal with it. You don't have to, like, you know, accept their fetching, but there's something about validating their feelings, you know, ignoring the fetching part, but trying to get to the bottom of it. As a parent, it's critical. A kid comes to you with an idea. Now, we all understand that the rhyme of, you know, what about 2 o'clock in the morning, let's jumping into a hot tub, whatever it is. We, or like, you know, putting a heater into the bathroom. Now, we know it's a dumb idea because you'll electrocute yourself and you could die, and that would be unfortunate. But just to blow it off out of hand is not healthy for the development of the child. No matter how silly we think the initial idea is, it's critical that we enable the children to at least think. But I'm saying in a serious way. I shouldn't say like to just treat it. Otherwise, the term is what's called a dismissing parent. And as a dismissing parent, when you don't give this kayach of shmia, of just listening, to an entire idea. Today I did it also. Again, I do this as a leader sometimes. You know, a kid comes to me, I knew exactly why he was coming to me. Very often, 9 out of 10 times, I know why a kid comes to my door in my office. So today a kid was in some class and he wanted to switch to another class. And I knew right away exactly what he wanted to do, and I knew his reasons. They're at the same time, it's the same subject, what's the big deal? And I'm saying to myself, if I let you switch, I got another 10 guys who want to switch. I didn't want to get into the whole conversation. So I said, he came to his rabbi, I want to talk to you about switching classes. I said, you can't. So the kid felt very frustrated. I said, you know what? So I'm not going to let him switch in the end of the day, but at least I have to give him the ability to hear him out and to listen to his reasons and to make it, because I don't want to be a dismissing person. And this goes to this idea, you never know, that you have to be willing to accept influence in any position, whether you're a husband, listening to your wife. The worst kind of relationship is when you're not willing to accept any influence, because if you're not willing to accept any influence, then naturally what all you are is somebody just trying to give over your sheet. That's not a relationship. You have to be willing to accept all kinds of influence. If you're not willing to accept that influence in the household, then you're at loggerheads. Because it's a mirror. It's always a mirror. The more you're willing to respect the other person, the more you're going to get respected. With children, if you want their respect, you have to be willing to give them respect. You have to treat them with respect. You have to be able to, you know, validate again, as we said, their feelings. As a leader in whatever you do, in whichever profession you have, even when, I remember as a Rebbe, whenever I had a good idea, and the Menahal would say, wow, that's a great idea, you feel a little bit validated, which of course is part of your development. So then as a leader, in order for you to be successful as a leader, you always have to be willing to accept the influence of others. This is a klal in general. This is, of course, a big klal of the Torah. Going back to the parasha, one of the 48 kinyanim of Torah, you know, is Perkei Avos, we say, is the koach of Shmiah. Coming up in the daf, we're going to talk about the ear. Daf Hey. I'll never forget Daf Hey because this is the Gemara I was learning right before my second kid was born. Somebody told me, you should always learn different Gemaras when your kids are born, then you can remember the moments. And it's true. So I remember Ksuba's Daf Hey was what I was learning in 1998. And it's coming up Daf Yomi this Shabbos. So the Gemara says, one place says, you know, when somebody's something's saying bad, you put your fingers in your ear. Another thing says, you take the bottom of the lobe and you put it over your ear so you can't hear anything. And why is that? The Maral explains that when you put the lobe over the ear, that means that it's still complete. That your entire ear is complete. It's a complete functioning vessel. It's important. Rabbi Simon explains, it's important that the ear is a complete functioning vessel because it's the most important vessel we have in terms of being willing to be mushpa from other people. And he says, that's why an eved, a slave, after 6 years and is not willing to go out, he has to put something in his ear. To show, I forgot we were slaves in Egypt, and now I'm still a slave. So, but you should do that when you get sold into slavery. Why after 6 years? Because after 6 years, if you're not willing to be influenced by other people, and you're still a slave, and a slave has to do exactly what they're supposed to for no other reason, Then you got to remind yourself, no, you're not supposed to be a slave. You're supposed to be somebody who's active, who's a mushba in this world, who could receive something from this world. Of course, it all goes back to one of the verses we started with. One of the most exciting, but what separates Jews from the goyim was this one heroic act of shalom bayis. There were two nations living together, the Arabs and the Jews. Right? Sarah looked at this and said, this is not the way it's supposed to be. And Sarah said to Avram, get rid of Yishmael. So remember, you got to put yourself in Avram's shoes here. This is his son. He waited all these years for that son. He loved Yishmael. Right, we know it says Kachnach, says Bincha. And what's the next word? Asherah. Right? Which you loved. And Avram, Rashi says, I love both of them. And he says, that's Yitzchak. So he loves Yishmael. And yet, what does the Torah say? He got rid of Yishmael. And how does the Chumash say it? Whatever Sarah says, what are the next two words? Shema b'kolech. There's that word Shemi again. The heroic act of Avram Avinu, where he did something that was so difficult for him, because he was willing to accept the influence from Sarah Imenu. This koach of Shmia, of hearing, enabled the Jews to become that separate nation, different than the Arabs. And that was that moment of Avram. Yeah, but you have to put yourself in Avram's shoes. You can't just realize, it was easy for him to get. It wasn't easy for him to get rid of Yishmael. But whatever Sarah says, Shema b'kolech, this idea of listening to Sarah. And I asked Rabbi Kamenetsky tonight, I said, no, you have anything for me? I'm talking about the power of Shmir in a relationship. So Rabbi Kamenetsky said to me, yeah, it's very simple. I asked Rabbi Willig before I got married. I said, no, give me some Asa on getting married. He goes, it's very easy. He goes, whatever your wife says, you do. The power of Shmir. That does the Shalom Bayis. Right? This is Shalom Bayis. So that's the Gemara, really. All we're saying over is the Gemara. What does the Gemara say? Gachin v'lachish. Bend down and listen. The Koyach of Shmir. But it has to be not just a listening, because it's a dismissive listening. It shouldn't be a dismissive listening. It should be one which is that you're willing to take what I said before, this idea of accepting influence. And if one's willing to accept influence, and you read from the parasha of Ma Shama Shama Uba, it had an ability to affect Yisro. It changed him. It became a changed man. Then you become a changed person. You become a better person. You become a better husband. You become a better father. You become a better leader, which ultimately means you become somebody who's better at serving the Bar Yol. Have an amazing Shabbos.
So what do you think of saying then that we're recording?
Yeah.
That really, Yishmael's life was saved of being judged by Sherev Sham, because he learned Shmiah from his father.
Oh, Efshir. Who named him?
I mean, where else would he gotten that?
Who named him that? L'chor, his father named him Yishmael. Meaning, like, gotta be.
Maybe that was like Avram's essence all along, we never knew that, and Avram instilled that in Yishmael.
And that saved him, which ultimately caused.
Which is ironic, right?
All these terrible things.
Right, exactly. It saved him, which.
Yeah, it could be. But that idea caused.
Which means you don't listen to your wife.
Chas. Chas v'shalom.